there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 297. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, stroll on over to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such an exciting show for you this week, but I have to start by thanking all of you. Our quick announcement, we were nominated for the second year in a row for the Best GLBT Podcast for the National Podcast Awards. So exciting. That was all thanks to your nomination, so just wanted to pause here and thank you guys. Obviously, it would just be me talking and our guests just talking, and that you guys listen make it all the more special. And to reward you, we have an incredible doubleheader of a show for you this week with our first guest. Suzanne Wong is a television host, an actor, a stand-up comedian, an MC, a keynote speaker, a political activist, a minister, a radio host, a former foot model, a published author, and a stage 4 breast cancer thriver. Suzanne was the host of House Hunters, the number one rated show on the Home and Garden Television Network for almost 10 years, and she also hosted the spin-off show, House Hunters International. Suzanne co-hosted live coverage of the Academy Awards for Oscar.com, and that show won an Emmy. As an actor, Suzanne has appeared in numerous television series, most recently starring in the outrageously funny new sitcom From Here On Out for Here TV. As a stand-up comic, Suzanne won the first annual Andy Kaufman Award at the New York Comedy Festival. She was recognized for her courage, creativity, originality, and humor by the festival judges, and it won her a spot as a featured comic on Comedy Central's Premium Blend. She also won Best Up-and-Coming Comedian at the Las Vegas Comedy Festival. Honestly, this is one of those bios I could do for hours, but then we wouldn't have time to chat, so I will just say, Suzanne, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. That was the best, most lovely intro ever. I love the fact that you put former foot model in there.
See, when you're on for a second time, I get to incorporate the previous information.
Now, where did you find that? Where was that?
These are things you've told me. You told me you were a former foot model. I know.
So I used to be a dental assistant. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Crazy. Yes. First of all, congratulations on your nomination and on 297 episodes. That's fantastic.
It's crazy.
Well, here's my question. Did you say GLBT? Because I always hear LGBT. So what's the difference of putting gay first or lesbian first?
So I have to tell you, I'm actually a fan of LGBT. For these podcast awards, they do say GLBT. Now, the theory goes, and I subscribe to this, that you should always say LGBT so that you can at least put women first because they are more marginalized than men in the LGBT community. So that's why you should say LGBT. But by that logic, you should probably say TBLG, and nobody says that.
As far as the most to the least.
Exactly.
Wow. Interesting, because when you said that, I thought, oh, I'm used to hearing LGBT. Why is that?
Yeah, it doesn't roll off the tongue, GLBT, to me.
Not as much, does, or maybe it's just that we're used to it the other way.
But we were nominated and so thankful, so we'll go
yes,
with that.
That's so great. That's fantastic.
So good, so good.
Yay.
We have so much to chat about. Are you even remotely ready for this?
For this interview?
Yes. It's crazy.
Yes. I worked out. I did some cardio. I ate a healthy meal. I'm ready. Let's do this.
I have to say, as I said in your bio, in the intro, you are a radio host. How would you approach interviewing you? You've done so much. Where would you even start?
I can say that in the 25 years I've been in this business, no one has ever asked me that question.
Yay!
I would probably say what a lot of people have said to me, which is, what don't you do? And my response to that is, I'm terrible at gardening or taking care of plants.
Okay.
I lack them. I can't play softball or baseball at all.
Okay.
I'm not good at that. And I don't, what else don't I do? I don't like the smell of patchouli oil.
Okay.
Do you know what that smells like, by the way?
I do know what that smells like because I lived in Vermont for 6 years.
I'm not a fan. It repulses me. I have a super hyper olfactory sense. That might be another thing you don't know about me. I can smell if someone's drinking V8 juice in the next building. It's just, it's a strange thing. But that also means that when I was living in New York City, for the most part, I was really unhappy because I'm smelling, I don't know, urine on the streets or, you know, garbage or I don't know what I'm, but it also means that when I'm walking by a bakery, I'm much more happy than other people are. So, and I smell things before other people do. I can be in a car with three other people and I will say, oh no, because I smell a skunk and I'll be covering my face and people say, what are you talking about? And then 10 minutes later they say, oh, that smells so terrible.
You're like the canary in the coal mine. You can
sense
things.
I'm the canary in the coal mine, which, by the way, are yellow, so it works out perfectly.
And then that just happened. Yeah, I would say due to the high concentration, you could probably smell the patchouli in Vermont from at least three states over.
I think I can smell it from here.
So I have to, we're going to start out with a confession. I have a confession for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I had Paige Davis from Trading Spaces on the show last month, and I felt like I was cheating on you.
I'm trying to think if I've ever met her. I guess it's possible. I've been doing this for so long, and I've met and worked with so many different people at different events. But, yes, I remember. She was all the rage. Is that show still going on, and is she still hosting it?
No and no, but I always imagined in my head that, like, it was the House Hunters Trading Spaces. It was, like, the Sharks and the Jets, and it was a whole rivalry.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't feel that way. Does she feel that way about me?
No, apparently it's just me.
Yeah, I thought she was delightful on that show.
I'm just fabricating conflict between home show hosts.
You're trying to make something happen. You want a cat fight, don't you? I'm nonviolent. I'm a pacifist. You know what amazes me, and she probably got asked this too, is that people would say, I don't understand. What do you mean you're an actor? I thought you were a TV host. Or what do you mean you're a TV host? I thought you were a comedian. Or what do you mean you're a comedian? I thought you were a minister. And I'm thinking, people can only be one thing?
They can be more than that. You, Suzanne, you were a drinking game. I learned that about you, too.
Did I tell you that?
You did.
I really, from a House Hunters fan.
No, I really listened when you talked.
It wasn't exactly me that was a drinking game, but there was a House Hunters drinking game among college students that every time anyone on the show would say the word nice, like this is nice, or this decor is nice, or this house looks nice, or this backyard is nice, everyone would do a shot. Oh, they said nice.
That would get people pretty drunk.
Wouldn't it? And I think that on location, the segment producers would just beg them to get a thesaurus.
Yes.
Can you please
something else
with any other adjectives?
That's like me and my students. I tell my students they are not allowed to use the word interesting.
Really?
Yes.
What are you teaching?
I am a college professor. I teach sociology.
Really? You know I have a master's in cognitive psychology?
I know that you do. So
another thing we have in common is a love for psychology, sociology. I also love anthropology and archaeology. I like thinking about human behavior and in context and with each other and groups of people and the history of how people became the way they are now. I love all of that.
We should tell our listeners, lest they think you were an underachiever and thus were not listening to your bio, a BA in psychology from Yale and a master's in cognitive psychology from Brown. What were you thinking that you were going to – that came out wrong. What were you thinking, lady?
Why did you go to those schools?
You and your state schools. No, what were you thinking that you were going to do at that time?
I was actually – I'm a PhD dropout. I was going to get a PhD at Brown in cognitive psychology and then I think become a professor of psychology or maybe work at a think tank doing artificial intelligence and robotics.
Wow.
I think that's what I thought I was going to do. But I was very unhappy at Brown and I was sort of – I had OD'd on school because 4 years at Yale was very intense and wonderful and I loved it. But to go right from that, I should have gotten a URL pass. And does those even exist anymore? Back when I was in college, you could get a URL pass and just go to Europe for, I don't know, a year and just on with a backpack. And I feel like I should have done that because by the time I got to Brown, I was sort of fried from the whole world of academia. But I thought it was too soon for me to thrust myself into the working world. So I just did more school. And after a couple of years at Brown, I needed a leave of absence, so I got a master's degree and took a leave of absence thinking that I might go back someday. Actually, that's a lie. I think I knew that I was never going to go.
Yeah.
back. So I moved to Boston after I got my master's, and I got a job, a 9-to-5 job working at a healthcare consulting firm, using my master's degree in psychology and knowledge of statistics to collect data and statistically analyze it and interpret it for good cause projects, Planned Parenthood, AIDS research, some corporate work. It was doing marketing research for different companies, healthcare related.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there at my cubicle at work in my 9-to-5 job in Boston, and I was listening to the radio, and they were having a casting call for extras for the TV series Spencer for Hire. Do you remember this? Did I tell you this?
No, you didn't tell me this.
Oh, okay. So I'm listening to them saying, if you want to be an extra on Spencer for Hire, which was a cop drama starring Robert Urich.
Oh, yeah.
You remember it?
I remember, yeah.
And they said, come to Government Center Plaza. Do you know Boston?
Yes, I do.
So come to Government Center Plaza. So I took a long lunch and went and stood in line at Government Center Plaza in Boston with hundreds of people just wanting to do extra work, and everyone in Boston and their grandmother and their dog. I'm just standing behind this huge line of people, and they just have you fill out a small information note card, and they take, I think, your Polaroid picture, and that's it. So then about a month later, I get a phone call from Ann Baker, who is the casting director in Boston, and she said, would you like to do extra work on Spencer Fryer tomorrow? And I said, sure, and I called in sick from work, and all that. So I remember the call times are very early in the morning, often, when you're doing a television show or a movie. And I think my call time was, let's say, 6 a.m. And that night I set my alarm for whatever time I would need to get up, maybe 5:30 a.m. So that, no, not for 6 a.m., maybe 4:30 a.m. for 6 a.m. to get all ready with my wardrobe and take a shower and all that stuff and get to the location, which was actually walking distance from my house. So what happened, this is back when I had an alarm clock radio plugged into my wall, and that's how I woke up.
Nice.
Because there weren't cell phones. So in the middle of the night, the power went out in my building. I am not kidding you.
Oh, gosh.
So my alarm clock radio did not go off in the morning, and I'm not a morning person. So I slept and slept and slept until my home phone rang. And I pick it up, hello, and I hear, Suzanne, this is Ann Baker. I'm just wondering if you're planning to show up for work today. And I thought, oh, now luckily, I can think really quickly when I wake up. You know how some people are really groggy for hours?
Oh, yeah.
I wake up, my brain is going, what? I look at my clock radio, it's flashing 3 a.m. or something. And I say, oh, my God, Ann. My alarm clock radio is flashing 3 a.m. The power must have gone off in my building. My alarm didn't go off. I promise you, I am an overachieving Asian. I'm never late. I'm a complete professional. I'm so sorry. I live right around the corner from the location. Please let me still come. I can be there in 10 minutes. And she says, you better get here so fast. And she slams the phone down. This is a very auspicious beginning to my acting career, right? So I wish I had video of what I looked like in my apartment for the next 5 minutes. I didn't have time to shower. I mean, I don't know what am I wearing? What am I bringing wardrobe-wise? Because they wanted me to bring a bunch of choices. But somehow I managed to get there in record time. You know how when a mother's newborn infant is trapped under a car, which probably never happens, but she has the superhuman strength to lift the car up? You know, you get that adrenaline of what you can accomplish. I think that I did 100 things in 5 minutes in my apartment because I had to. It was important to me. And I'm running to the location. Of course, when I get there, if you know anything about the way television shows are shot, they hadn't even begun to start shooting anything by the time I got there.
Wow.
So I got to settle down a little bit and maybe put some makeup on and comb my hair and calm down. And I think I then picked up the phone and ordered a dozen roses to be sent to Ann Baker's office with a big apology and please call me again and I'm so sorry. Right?
And then you helped Robert Urich solve the case.
I wish, not as an extra. But I remember feeling fascinated. The reason that I wanted to do it is I thought, I've been watching television. I love television. I would love to see what is that like to be on a show.
Yeah.
And I was mesmerized because there were hundreds of people in the crew and all these lights and metal stands set up, and they do everything over and over and over again from all these different angles. I just sat there with my jaw dropped, just taking it all in like a sponge, which is how I am to this day. I'm fascinated and curious about everything. It's one of the reasons I love documentaries. Please bring me into a world I know nothing about. I'm a junkie for that, for new life experiences and knowledge, and I'm passionate. So I'm having the best time. And this character actor comes over to me. He looks sort of like a Charles Durning type. He's probably in his late 40s or early 50s at this point. I'm probably 25.
Okay.
And he comes over to me and he says, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm Arnie Cox. Who are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm Suzanne Wong." And he says, "How come I haven't seen you around?" Because it turns out that in Boston at the time, there were 50 actors total, and everybody knew each other. It was like a little family.
Yeah.
So he knew that I wasn't part of this family. And I said, "Oh, I'm Suzanne Wong. Yeah, I have a real job. That's why you haven't met me." Not even thinking that that could be construed as insulting and offensive to him. But he wasn't fazed. He said, no, here's what you need to do. And he takes a piece of paper and he writes down 10 things. And he says, "You start doing these 10 things tomorrow, and you will be working all the time as an actress in Boston, I promise."
Wow.
And I say, "Really?" So he ended up being this guardian angel, sort of taking me under his wing. So I started doing those things, and within 4 weeks, I had quit my 9-to-5 healthcare consulting firm job, and I started making a living as a professional actress, because he knew that of the 50, there were hardly any Asian women.
Yeah.
And that there was a niche for commercials and corporate videos that wanted diversity in casting. He could tell that I was articulate. I became a host spokesperson for corporate videos that were in-house, and occasionally there'd be a TV show or a movie that would shoot there. And one of the highlights of my Boston career was that I auditioned for a movie called House Sitter, starring Steve Martin, one of my all-time heroes, and Goldie Hawn.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this romantic comedy, and it's quite funny. And I auditioned for a speaking role, and I got it.
Look at you.
And my scene was with Steve Martin. Are you kidding me? I only had 4 lines. I played his boss's secretary, but he has to talk to me before he can get in to see his boss at the architecture firm where he works. And I thought I was going to die of happiness that I would get to be on set with Steve Martin. And because our scene was such a short scene, they kept planning it for the end of the day, and we'll just knock it off real quick, but then they'd never get to it. So they'd have me come back the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. I'm not kidding you. I was on set for a week for what was supposed to be a very short scene, which made me so happy because I got to be on set more. And Steve Martin was very shy. You know, the camera goes on, and he goes crazy, and then the camera goes off, and he just runs into a corner. I don't know if you know that about him.
I did not.
Yes. So he's, and a lot of comedians can be quite shy in real life, but when the camera goes on, you know, they're on. And then there's other comedians who are always on. But I do remember at one point there was a lunch break, and Frank Oz was the director. So it was me and Steve Martin and Frank Oz and a bunch of people sitting around having lunch. And I decide to quote, I had Steve Martin's comedy albums memorized verbatim, his stand-up albums. This is back when there were albums.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember I thought I'd quote him to himself in the middle of lunch. So in the middle of lunch, I just blurt out, I interrupt conversation. I say, "Hey, Steve, isti mundus spiribundus." "Oh, forgot, you don't speak Latin." And he started laughing, and everyone started laughing, but he's laughing in a way that makes me think that he doesn't realize that I'm quoting him. So I say, "Steve, I'm quoting you from one of your stand-up comedy albums." And he says, "Really? Wow, I'm pretty funny." And I thought, that must mean that a lot of his stuff was off the cuff and not necessarily planned out, like, "I'm going to make sure to do the Latin bit right here." It was remarkable. And then another great thing about Steve Martin is, because he didn't love to interact with his fans, he didn't seem to want to have conversations with them or take pictures with them or sign autographs, he had these business cards pre-printed that said on them, "This is to certify that you have had a personal moment with Steve Martin and found him to be warm and friendly. And anyone that would come up to him, he would just whip one out of his pocket and shove it at them with no happy facial expression and then just walk away.
Oh, I would pay to get one of those.
Right?
I would laminate it and frame it.
I'm pretty sure I have one somewhere, but I'm a recovering clutterer, so who knows where that is.
I love that.
But
oh,
that
man.
That was the beginning of my acting career, and I had natural talent, and then I, of course, started to freak out because as an Asian, I'm thinking, I'm a fraud. I've never taken an acting class. I better get trained. So, of course, I started taking every acting class there was. Because of my ignorance of how the show business industry worked, it worked in my favor because I would just go into these auditions and have fun and do whatever they wanted me to do without any sort of desperation or need for them to like me or think I was talented because I was blessed with parents that told me that I'm wonderful and they love me and I can accomplish anything that I want to in the world. So because of going into the audition process like that, I just went and had fun, and I booked 18 of the first 20 auditions I went on in
Whoa.
Boston. So I thought mistakenly, because ignorance was bliss in this case, that auditions were just the fun things that you go to before you go on the set.
Yeah.
And that has sort of sustained itself, honestly, throughout my entire career.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Well, I have to say, part of your career, which I am particularly obsessed with, are your fans. Do you have the sense that you have particularly loyal and rabid fans out there?
I do. And not only that, they tend to be wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful and kind and funny and respectful for the most part. I mean, I've been in the public eye now for, I don't know, close to 20 years. Yeah, it's been 20 years, I think, since I got my first job hosting Breakfast Time on FX.
Yeah.
And I have to say, there's only a handful of stories that aren't fantastic.
And you have an affectionate term for them, which I don't even know if it's FCC compliant, so I don't even know that I can put it out there. Let's say that you call them sunflowers. Where did you come up with the name that you call them? Which, by the way, is not sunflower.
I can say it rhymes with clock waffles.
Yes, it does.
It rhymes with clock waffles. Well, I like to make up words. So, for example, I like amalgamated words especially. So I've always really loved sneezing. You know how people, instead of sneezing, they'll sort of stifle it and it sounds like, ah, like
yes.
that?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, why are you doing that? You're depriving yourself of a glorious, cathartic, fun, celebratory sneeze. And so to me, when I sneeze, it's full participation, and I call it a facegasm.
Wow.
Right? And so I like to make up words. I like to make up words. And so I like to amalgamate words and put two different words together, like my license plate says Crasian, which is my word for a crazy Asian. You take crazy and Asian, and you shove them together, and you get Crasian. Right?
Yeah.
So I also like to amalgamate swear words. So I took the word that rhymes with clock and then put that next to waffle. And I don't know, because those two words, you would never put them together. That sounded sort of funny to me. And so I think I just decided to call all my fans clock waffles at one point. But I've also used different amalgamated funny words. And that one in particular, of all the words I've ever made up, that one stuck, and it was like my fans just decided amongst themselves that they wanted to be called that.
And they took to it.
And they took to it, and now I can be at some event in Los Angeles, and someone will walk up to me and say, "Hi, I'm a clock waffle." And I say, "Oh, hi.
I'm Suzanne." Yeah. I love it. I love it. Well, we're going to play a game with you. Although, first, before we even get to our game, tell everybody about the playing field. Because if I were out there, I would be there.
I am so glad you asked me about that. So the playing field began, I'm a stage 4 breast cancer survivor and now thriver. I reversed stage 4 breast cancer, which is a whole other story that would take us hours to discuss. But just know that it was a 6-year journey of having breast cancer 3 different times, and the third time it metastasized all over my body. And I was given 6 months to live about 3.5 years ago. And I said to that doctor, "No, thank you. You can keep that diagnosis.
Yeah.
I'm going to just be reversing that." And
yeah.
I did. However, It put me $500,000 into debt from all the medical bills and the cancer treatments that were not covered by insurance, which is also another really sad story about the status of cancer and treatments and insurance money and all that stuff. So here I am, finally healthy again, but in so much debt. And what I wasn't able to work for a number of years as an actor or comedian or host. And in Los Angeles, if you're sort of out of the loop for even a little while, it's hard to jump back in there.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the people that you used to work with are not doing that anymore. There's so much turnover in the industry. So you have to, it can be like going from having a PhD to being in nursery school. So instead of feeling like I'm at the effect of the industry and sitting around waiting for something to happen, I wanted to take back some power of how I could be making money. And I'm thinking, how can I make money and also contribute to society? And for years, people have been begging me to teach. And I thought, oh, teach what? Teach acting? That would be, if I just taught acting, that would be boring because I get bored easily.
Right.
And so I thought, well, what would I teach? Would I teach acting, writing, or stand-up comedy, or songwriting, or dancing, or keynote speaking, or what would I teach? Would I teach spiritual principles? And then I hear a voice say to me, teach everything.
Nice.
Like Yoda's in my head. And I'm thinking, ooh, teach everything. That sounds wonderful to someone like me. But what does that mean? I have no precedent set for that. I have no template for that. What does it mean to teach everything? And sometimes I work the best when I have a heading or a title for something or a name for it. Everything can fall into place from that. So the name The Playing Field came to me because the word play is in it, because I wanted whatever workshop I would teach to have the spirit of play. And then calling it The Playing Field, because I'm a huge sports person and I love a good sports analogy, I imagine a wide open field where artists of any type, meaning athletes of any type, if you follow the analogy, could show up and practice their craft on a level playing field as well, where there's nobody who's, this person's good and this person's bad. I wanted it to be a safe, sacred, fun environment in the way that if you're just playing catch on a baseball field or just practicing something just to get better at it and enjoying it on a beautiful, warm summer day. I wanted the workshop to have that kind of feeling. So I came up with The Playing Field, and I thought, great. And then I thought, well, where would I teach this? I would want to teach it in a theater as opposed to a cold studio with fluorescent lights and some folding chairs.
Right.
I thought, why not teach it in a theater? Because that's where artists would want to come, to a theater. And I started to look around my neighborhood, and I found this beautiful place in Burbank called the Missing Piece Theater. And the owner calls it the Missing Piece Theater because she has a child who is autistic, and she's always felt like there's been a missing piece between him and his happiness, or between him and reality. And she said, I only want to have things happen at this theater that in some way provide a missing piece for the people who come here. And I told her about The Playing Field because I completely believe that we are all artists. I believe that unexpressed creativity and unexpressed emotion lead to all the problems that exist. I believe that there are plenty of places that teach artists that are incredibly abusive, like in the movie Whiplash. Abusive, insulting, traumatizing, toxic teachers that feel the need to destroy you and then build you back up. And if that's what you're looking for, there are plenty of places for that where you can be insulted and degraded. I don't personally think that's a great way to get someone to become a better artist. And so this is the antidote for that, where I don't have a teacher's ego of being up on some pedestal, and you come in and you have to do things to please me. I don't need you to please me. I'm already pleased.
Yeah.
I'm a happy person. I don't need to be pleased. What would please me is for you to bring what your unique voice and gifts and your soul and your expression of it in its most authentic, honest, vulnerable, brave form. And I will help you blow on the embers of that and turn it into a forest fire of expression. And that's what The Playing Field is to me. So the way it begins is it's every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And what happens is I let anyone come and audit once for free. So if anyone is listening and they're interested in coming once for free to audit, you can email me at gookwaffle@gmail.com and ask me about it. But for the first half hour or so, I take the group and we do something different every time. I might give a writing assignment. We might do an improv game. We might go outside and do something. We might watch a video and discuss it. I might do paired exercises, or we might play with Play-Doh and have creative time that's tactile to tap into your sense of touch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just tapping people back into the present moment and into the spirit of play and being a child again and enjoying creating. And then after we're done doing that, each field mate, because I don't like to call them students, each field mate, because we're part of a community, would get up one at a time, and I give them each 7 minutes during which they can do whatever they want to do on stage. They can be an actor doing a monologue or a scene. It could be memorized. It could be cold reading. They could sing a song that they wrote, a song that someone else wrote. They could play a musical instrument. They could do a magic trick or do some stand-up comedy or do a beginning of a keynote speech. Or I have a professor who would do parts of a lecture because she would want to find ways to make the material that she's talking about more compelling and interesting and unique and specific in the way that she's teaching it. And then after they're done, I give them a one-on-one private coaching session, but the whole community gets to benefit from the one-on-one coaching. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So that's what we do.
I love it. I love it.
I think it's my favorite thing that I've ever done with my life.
Other than this show. That's beautiful.
Did you just say other than this show?
Moving on to our game. Moving on.
That's so fantastic. And also, you know, there's this Maya Angelou quote, "There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside of you."
Oh.
And this is a place where people can come and tell their untold story, and it's safe and it's sacred and it's confidential what people share. And there's also that Rumi quote, "Out beyond all ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there."
Wow.
Oh, beautiful. Because I don't tell people that that's wrong and this is right and this is bad and this is good. Whatever you bring, I will help you. I'm like your midwife. I'll help you give birth to it.
And as our faithful listeners know, many folks in the entertainment industry refer to the Holy Triad as Maya Angelou, Rumi, and This Show Is So Gay. So I'm thrilled that we could highlight those three together. My friend, are you ready to play a game? Let's play a game. So we have coming up next on the show, Terry Ray, a great buddy of yours. We're going to talk about From Here On Out with Terry and get all the updates, because last time we chatted with you guys, it was before it premiered. So we're going to chat with Terry about how things have been going since then. But Terry is a game show aficionado, and I know that you have that background as well. So what we're going to do is we are going to ask you, Suzanne, 6 questions, and if Terry can match 4 of those 6, you guys will win This Show Is So Gay magnets.
Oh, we will for our refrigerators?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Okay, you ready to go? So we got 6 questions. I will note down your answers, and I will help Terry along so you can win. Nobody has ever lost. I'd prefer not to start now.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Suzanne, question number 1. Between you and Terry, who would you say is the spender and who is the saver?
I would say Terry is the spender.
Okay. And I should tell our listeners, all of these questions came from the actual Newlywed Game.
Oh, so are we gonna? Is there going to be an answer that's going to be in the butt, Bob?
Oh, you love that one, right? It never gets old. It never gets old. Almost all of them. I had to change a couple of them. Okay, question number 2. What living female celebrity do you, Suzanne, most admire?
What living female celebrity do I most admire? Oprah Winfrey.
Okay.
Because I got her to do a show about The Secret.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. All right, Oprah Winfrey. Question number 3. Who is the better cook, Terry or Suzanne?
Oh, anyone but Suzanne, so I'm going to say Terry.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, I have a From Here On Out question, okay?
Okay.
If Terry were to play the game Marry, Shag, and Kill, where I will give you 3 names, and you have to tell me which one Terry would marry, which one he would shag, and which one he would kill.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Here are your 3 choices. Dottie, Davina, and Rico. Who would he marry, who would he shag, and who would he kill?
He would marry Davina.
Okay.
He would shag Rico.
That one we knew, yes.
And he would kill Dottie. Wait, is that true?
We'll find out in the next segment.
Yeah, I think he would kill Dottie.
Okay, we will find out. Question number five. I've never had this game, End Friendships. Let's find out. Question number five. Now, this is very revealing, very revealing. What is your, Suzanne, what is your biggest phobia?
I'm really afraid of bugs, you know, spiders.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah, spiders, bugs, yes. Ugh.
Okay. Last question, question number six. And I'll give Terry a ring, and she can get it within 3 years. How old, Suzanne, do you think Terry was when he had his first kiss?
How old was Terry when he had his first kiss? I'm going to say sweet 16.
All right, we're going to put that down. Maybe we'll give a 10-year range there. Okay. Everybody wins. Everybody wins. Well, listeners, you all must stroll on over to SuzanneWhang.com, SuzanneWhang. We will link to it. There's so much fun stuff going on there. And normally, at this point in the show, Suzanne, I write my own little praise for our guest, but I stole this one because I was searching around and I put together a couple different quotes of what people have said about you, and they said it even better than I could. And I will say this. Imagine someone who is wise like Yoda, funny like George Carlin, and listens like your dearest friend. That is Suzanne. Suzanne is intuitive, wise, generous, caring, and funny as hell. And as people said over and over that they were honored to work with you, I'm really and truly, I mean this, honored to have you on the show.
Thank you, Ken. This has been wonderful. You're right. It's part of the Holy Trinity to do this show.
It's usually Spencer for Hire, House Hunters International, and This Show Is So Gay. Everybody, SuzanneWhang.com. Suzanne, always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, Ken. Have a great night.
Folks, and we are back. Well, I should mention, because we left this part out, but we want you to know that Suzanne is actually going to be singing at the Rockwell on Monday, March 23rd, as part of their Up with a Twist, and she said she's very nervous and would feel a lot better if we all showed up. So we're all going to show up for that. But we return to you with our second guest for this show. Terry Ray is an award-winning actor, writer, producer, game show survivor, even a lyricist. In over 75 plays, he has appeared with such stars as Dixie Carter, the late great Elaine Stritch, and Matthew Perry. Terry is the writer of Hollywood Goes Classical at the famed Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, starring Mickey Rooney, Michael York, Dean Jones, and Rhonda Fleming. Terry co-wrote and starred in the short film Gaydar, which appeared in over 115 film festivals around the world, and it reaped in the awards. The film also inspired Terry and his brother, Brett Ray, to create the popular Gaydar gun toy, which Terry voices. It was just used on a Baywatch babe. We'll put that out there. Terry also appears in scores of Gaydar gun videos that you can watch on YouTube. I'm telling you, it's a blast. Terry has created, written, and stars in Here Media's first sitcom, From Here On Out, which also stars Suzanne Whang and the legendary Juliet Mills. And now Terry is here with us. Terry Ray, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Can you make me blush? You can see the color of my behind right now. I'm sure it's pink.
Well, I must say, Grove City, Ohio's native son, a belated happy birthday to you.
Well, gosh, you are really current with all your information. I mean, I just, you mentioned Alexandra Paul, the Baywatch thing with Gator Gun. I mean, that's like 5 minutes old.
We keep on top of things here in Cleveland.
You apparently, I swear, I'm very impressed.
So how was your birthday? You turned 40, very exciting.
Yes, you are accurate with all your information. I barely turned 40, and it was a glory. I live in a building with all my friends. There's four of us, four units in a row, which includes Jim J. Bullock, who's one of my neighbors from Too Close for Comfort. And we all have birthdays in the same week. So it was a joint building commune birthday party.
Can I just say, first of all, it's not a sitcom, folks. Jim J. Bullock actually lives in his building.
He is my wacky neighbor in real life.
That's hilarious. I have to take that one step further. I mean, Gaydar, tons of people have seen it, but can we just pause and reflect here on This Show Is So Gay that there was a project that had Terry Ray, Jim J. Bullock, and Charles Nelson Reilly all in the same project?
It's true. I mean, the gay meter was like screaming. It was so high.
I love it.
It was crazy.
I love it. Well, last time you were on the show, From Here On Out was about to debut, which it has done. What has this ride been like for you?
It's been really kind of crazy fun. I didn't know what it was going to be like, and it's been a lot of fun feedback and unexpected people that would have watched it. I can tell you a quick story. I got off the airport at Christmas, out of the airport to catch a bus, and it's horrible at LAX at the holiday time because the buses are horribly packed and you can't catch one. And I saw one just getting ready to leave, and I'm like, oh crap, and I run to the bus, and I'm like, it's just getting ready to go into gear and pull off, and the bus driver, I knocked, and he looked my way, and he turned back, and he went, what? And he stopped, opened the door, he said, Guy Dubai. And I'm like, what? He's like, you are on Guy Dubai. We got room for you in my bus. It's like the last person you think would watch, you know, From Here On Out is the bus driver at the airport, but he watched it, and I got a ride from it. So,
what was it like for you to watch episodes with other people, which I imagine that you did?
It makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I always look at, I can't watch. I have to secretly out of the corner of my eye see if they're paying attention, if they're enjoying it. I can't really watch it.
Okay. Are there scenes that you look at and say, oh, I would have done that differently? Because I want you to look at things and say, that's exactly the way that should have been done.
You know what? It was shot so quickly, so crazy quickly, with three cameras at the same time. And I'm almost in every scene and going out of order and stuff. And so in my mind at the time, it's like, I just trying to, like, I don't know. My memory was a little blurred by the whole thing. So when I see it together, it's like, it sort of jogs my memory. And I go, I think that turned out the way I wanted it. And for the most part, I think it was captured really well for how we had to do it so quickly. And Sam Urban, our director, gets credit for, you know, having the steely nerves to get that done.
Nice. Now, we are in two different fields, you and I. We do different things, and thus we measure success differently. How do you go about measuring the success of From Here On Out?
I don't know. I'm told that it's done really, really well, but I have no way personally of knowing.
Okay.
But they have been thrilled with the numbers. It's by far the biggest numbers they've ever had on one of their shows. So,
huge.
So for them, it's been a really big success. And I think, I don't know if you talked with Suzanne about this or not, but they are just getting ready to launch it in Europe. So it's
okay.
Like they're going to restage the premiere in Europe, and then hopefully that'll...
So you mentioned season two, so I would imagine that there was some point where you were questioning, oh gosh, are they going to greenlight a second season? And then they did. How did that come about?
Well, they always planned on making more. From
okay.
the very beginning, we wanted to make more. The second season has been written at the same time as the first season, so it was all written at once. And we always had intentions to do that because the first season is only 6 episodes, and we sort of wanted them to be 12. And so there was always that other 6 in the works. And then it just delivered well enough that they were like, yes, yes, we're definitely doing it. So it was always hopeful because especially when you write something, you're like, okay, it's there, and I really want to do this, and I think it's going to for sure happen. So
okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just between us girls, is season 3 written?
Well, I can't really. I I have things I want to do that I think are delicious, but I don't dare speak them because I don't want anybody to change what I'm thinking.
Okay. I gotcha. But I would imagine that one of the episodes is set in Cleveland.
It's because, you know why? It's hot there, and there's a lot of hot guys. And are you willing to play one of the dead bodies? You know what's entailed in that, right?
Oh, I am willing to be the makeup guy on one of those bodies, yes. I feel that's better suited for my skills.
Oh, okay. So you can play the makeup person.
Yes.
All right. That's a needed job.
For folks who have not seen From Here On Out, and by the way, shame on you, listeners, if you have not yet seen it, what's the pitch? Give us the pitch to get people to watch it, because this really is a different type of show than folks have seen before.
Well, I call it kind of it's like a gay version of 30 Rock with a Tootsie twist.
Nice.
That's the briefest way I could say it. It's a show about making an uber sexy gay show, and we're spoofing making that world. We're spoofing that world, and the fictional show that we're making is Guy Dubai, International Gay Spy. And I'm basically playing a version of myself. I'm playing the creator of the show, the guy who's has to make this thing on a restricted budget with a lot of hurdles to get over. And so I'm sort of playing myself in a weird way. When my character gets the job, I'm sitting in the seat and the couch and the room where I actually got the job and where I actually was interviewed, because we actually shoot this at the Here TV office. So it's kind of surreal for me because watching myself in those places, like you talked about, like watching the show, it is a little surreal because I remember the meetings that got me to that place in that room, in that chair.
Wow. That's crazy. Now, I know you are a consummate professional, but as I said in your intro, Juliet Mills, is there ever a day that you worked with Juliet Mills where you didn't think, that's the nanny from The Nanny and the Professor?
Never. It never left my mind. I love her so much, and just hearing her say my words, it was so hard to remember, oh, yeah, you have to act, too. I couldn't just sit there and stare at her, though I had the best seat in the house because I'm right across from her, but, oh, my God, I love her. And she's so natural, so talented, and cool.
Yeah.
She's just cool. I love her.
You have more of a sense of kind of way more of a sense than I would about kind of the media landscape out there for different shows. Do you foresee a time? Is Here TV, do you think, the only place this show could be on? Can we get to that point, or maybe we're there, where From Here On Out could somehow air on another network?
I think it totally could. I think that if we would need to tame some of the aspects that Here TV can offer that other channels can't. Like, we do have the nudity thing going on, which is something that they wanted, Here TV wanted for their people, because they can offer that and other channels can't.
Right.
So I personally think that this could be done without any nudity whatsoever, and it would be able to play on a lot of networks. And I think that those networks would be surprised with how many viewers they would get and how many straight viewers they would get. When we were shooting it, the crew came in, they were, you know, straight guys who just got hired for a job, they don't know what they're going to shoot. And at first they were like, what is this gay show that we're doing with these hot guys? You know, what is this about? And then by the second, third day, they were coming up to me because they knew I was the writer as well, going, I told my girlfriend about this scene. I told my wife about the scene. And it's just, I was like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've watched this show. It's really funny. So that to me was the best compliment and kind of proof that this is ready for crossover, that people, funny is funny.
And yeah.
That's the lesson, I think.
Yeah. You know, we've said perhaps on occasion that the LGBT audience can be pretty hypercritical, which we can understand on some level just because there is such a dearth of LGBT content out there. So what kind of response have you received from the LGBT community?
The very first reaction was people judging it based on a photograph, that people would make comments, this looks stupid, this looks fun, just on a picture with not seeing anything. And I think that's interesting. It's like, why would you decide that you needed to make a comment when you haven't seen the show yet? That,
right.
That was a lot of the initial reactions from the press. They just prejudged it, and thought it was going to be something that it wasn't, didn't realize it was spoof and that we were actually spoofing what they were seeing. And, But the comments that I've seen after that, where people who've actually watched the show are happy about it. They're like, wow, this is the first time we're seeing this spun around and spoofed. And I think that is something that they're starting to appreciate.
Yeah. So what happens now? What are the next steps for you?
Well, I've been busy. I wrote 5 movies for Hallmark last year.
Oh my gosh.
One of them started to produce, but they're in various stages. And then I decided to write a gay play, which I have never done in my life, and it's not really a comedy. It's sort of a sexy drama, and I'm very excited about it. I'm super happy with how it turned out, and I wanted to put it up this year. And I'm going to push myself and play one of those roles.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's exciting. It's 2 actors. It takes place in Ohio. Have you ever heard of Chillicothe, Ohio?
No, but I barely know where I am right now, so that's not surprising.
Chillicothe was the original capital of the state of Ohio.
I had no idea.
It was a little town that I used to drive through when I was a kid, and so I set it there because I have memories of this town, and there's something about that town that you know about if you watch the play. And anyway, I am very, very excited. It takes place at these 2 guys' high school reunion, their 10-year reunion, and then it takes place in the same hotel room, like a bit like same time next year, over the next several decades. So they go for 4 reunions. They're back in that same hotel room. And it changes from 1983, when AIDS is just like the scary thing, through 2013, gay marriage. And those 30 years, that encompasses huge, huge, gigantic change in gay events.
Wow.
Maybe once the play is up, we can talk about that more.
So the part of the Ohio gay radio show host, I would assume, is a pivotal role.
It's very crucial.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm hoping to audition. You let me know when. Well, we have arrived at that part of the show, Terry, where we must see if you win our version of the Newlywed Game. Suzanne has answered 6 questions. I have said that if you get 4 out of 6 right, you will win more This Show Is So Gay magnets for your fridge.
Oh, my God.
I know. Okay, we got 6 questions, 4 out of 6. Here we go. Suzanne has answered these questions. Question number 1. Between you and Suzanne, who did Suzanne say is the spender and who is the saver?
Well, I would say that she's the spender and I'm the saver.
Unfortunately, that is not the correct answer.
That's
she said,
not what she said.
She said you were the spender and she was the saver.
Seriously.
It's okay.
I've been to her house. She hasn't been to mine. She doesn't know.
Here we go. Here we go. You're going to get more right. I'm going to help you along. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not even going to pause so maybe you can put like a suggestion in my brain. Okay. Okay. Guys.
Question number 2. Which living female celebrity did Suzanne say she most admires? I'll give you a hint. She was able to affect this woman's talk show to get her to read a book.
Oh, okay. Got it. No, there's a picture of it, her on her wall with her. Oprah.
The correct answer is indeed Oprah Winfrey. Oh. Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We got 1 right. Question number 3. Who is the better cook? Who did Suzanne say is the better cook, Terry or Suzanne?
Oh, man. I've been to her house several times, and I've never seen her cook, but she's never been to my place. So I don't know if she can cook or not. I don't cook very much. This would be a good time for something to be, like, hinted at.
Do the opposite of what you did last time with the first question.
Okay, the first time I thought it was her, she said it was me. So if I say it's me, it's actually her.
I feel you provided the correct answer because you provided all of the answers. Suzanne said that the correct answer was Terry. Terry is the better cook. I'm going to give you that one.
That's what I said, for me.
Yeah. All right, here we go. This is a big one. This is a big one. Question number 4. If you, Terry, we're playing the game Marry, Shag, or Kill. Have you ever played that game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Here are your 3 choices, Terry. Marry, Shag, or Kill. Dottie, Davina, and Rico. Who would you marry, who would you shag, and who would you kill?
Well, shag would be Rico.
That is correct. That one I wasn't worried about.
Yes. Okay. Marry and kill.
This is dicey. I don't know. I don't know about this one.
Yeah. Marry or kill. I would say that she would say I would marry Dottie, kill Davina.
Unfortunately, that was not the correct answer. She said you would kill Dottie and marry Davina. I know. It's okay. It's okay. Because, yes, you were going to shag Rico. That was the gimme of that part of the question. That's okay. If you get the next two right, you will have won the game by math that I do not teach. Here we go. What did Suzanne say is her biggest phobia? And for some reason, I felt like this one was intuitive, and I don't really know why.
I don't get any hints for biggest phobia.
I'm going to give you two guesses, though. Go with pretty common phobias.
Okay. All right.
Go with common phobias.
Fear of heights.
Okay, do another one.
Would be not, like, if I was to think about insects or something like that, or small spaces, or...
No, you go with your original one. The correct answer is indeed bugs and spiders. Insects,
bugs.
Very good.
Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you.
Here we go. All right. It all comes down to this question in our very fabricated drama, because I don't think it actually comes down to this question. But let's just say that this is pivotal. How old did Suzanne say that you, Terry, were when you had your first kiss?
Oh, my God. These questions are so difficult.
You won the first time. I had to make them harder.
Okay, all right. Well, something teen.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and I will give you a two-year plus or minus.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, then 19 minus 17 and then minus 15. So if I say 17, 19 or 16, 15, I'm going to say 17.
She did indeed say 16, so you won.
Oh, wow. I just nailed that whole contest. Thank you.
How sad is it and disturbing that I can hear Chuck Woolery in my head saying, Schneck, that was not the way to do it.
Listen, Chuck Woolery barely escaped with his life from me, so he would be just be pleased that we got through it.
Terry, where should everyone go to follow all the cool things that you're doing?
Oh, wow. Well, you can go to – I have a new website since the last time you talked to me. You can go to terryray.tv.
Nice.
You just see about everything there.
I love it. Do not go, by the way, listeners, to terryray.org because that's a different guy. I looked it up. So Terry
–
you should look it up on your own time because it's quite fascinating. You should go to terryray.tv. Sir, you have to know that I love having you on this show.
You have to know how much I love your show and love doing your show. You are a fantastic – everybody who's listening already knows this, but I'm going to repeat it for all your little ears. He is a fantastic host.
Well, thank you. Seriously, you're great. Well, this is what I'm going to let you do, sir. And not a lot of people over the history of the show, this is episode number 297, and only a handful of folks have gotten to do the closing line with me. Would you do the closing line? When it comes to it, your part is to say so gay, and you'll know it when we come to it.
I am so honored.
All right,
okay.
Here we go.
All right.
Listeners, thank you so much for checking out this week's episode. And again, thank you guys so much for nominating us for Best GLBT Podcast. It's such an honor, so we thank you for that. Our thanks to Suzanne Wong. Our thanks to Terry Ray. You guys get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be
so gay.